A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a freshly minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 400,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming back to Rated G Radio. We're back with a fresh new episode today with Chris Gaida. He's the author of a book called Arm Candy. We're going to be bringing Chris on in just a couple of moments, but like we do every day, I want to kind of bring you on and give you the roadmap of where we've been for the week and also where we're going. So if you're new to the show today, number one, thanks for tuning in, but also you can follow the show. You just click the follow button right here on the show page and you'll get an email or text update, your choice. Every day that we're live most days of the week. We're actually taking tomorrow off because I'll get to that in a second. So yesterday on Monday's show, we had author Steve Jackson. He has a fantastic new book out. He's also part of Lit Up in Orange County, and he's also a board member of SCWA, Southern California Writers Association. And if you get a chance to come and hang out at any of their events, I'm always going to encourage you to do so. Chris will be on in just a second. Normally we have Zoe Niklaus on our second Wednesday of the month, but Zoe is actually doing a training workshop up in Alaska. I think she's on a cruise ship or something like that. And she was going to frantically try to figure out how to phone it in. And I said, you know, take your time, enjoy your time on the cruise and just, you know, we'll pick up next month. So tomorrow we're off. On Thursday's show on Rated LGBT Radio with my co-host Rob Watson, we're going to actually be welcoming New York actor Mike Drayden. He's been on Child of the 70s. He's been on Last Call. He's been in the movie Open and so much more. And Mike is going to talk to us about his experience behind the camera and also in front of it as an actor. On Friday's Friday Night Dance Party at 7 p.m., we're going to have Xander Demas, and he is a guitar player. And I don't know that much about him. I'm introduced to him by Mike Stover, who is a PR publicist dude who has been great in sending us some new guests over the last few weeks. So we're going to find out all about Xander on Friday's show. And to wrap up the week, we're going to have Super Gay Radio on Saturday morning with, of course, my co-host Paul Emery. He's better known on the internet as Paul in Mass. We'll be having, of course, Miss Viola with the RuPaul Review and finding out what's happening as that show is getting ready to wrap up. We'll also see if they're going to give us any type of a recap of what happened at DragCon this past weekend here in Los Angeles. I know that there are a lot of folks that were getting ready to go to that, and I've seen some posts over on social media about that in the last few days. So if you actually went to DragCon, and I would love you to call in on Saturday on Super Gay Radio, we will talk to you all about that. Our first guest and only guest for the show tonight is Chris Gaida. He is an author of this book called Arm Candy, and I was introduced to Chris for the show by my good buddy Rick Caratas, who's been on the show before. He's got a movie out called A Walk a Mile in My Pradas, which is fun, hysterical, and it's an independent LGBT movie. I'm always a big fan of supporting any of our guests who are on the show. So if you are, you know, listening to the show, watching the show, you'll notice that we've got a link to the Amazon Rated G Radio Superstar swag page. If you go there, you'll actually see Rick's movie available for purchase, and I'll encourage you to do that. Same with any of the guests that are on our show. If they've got something that they've come onto the show to promote, like Chris's book, we're going to feature them on the Superstar swag page in their respective category and books or music or movies. And we've also got a separate page just for stuff that I like. So go and check that out. Support our folks that are appearing on the show and buy their books, movies, music, whatever the case may be. In this case, it's Chris's book, Arm Candy. And we'll always say, buy 10 copies, you buy one for yourself, and then you have 9 for other fantastic gifts that you can give out through the rest of the year. But without further ado, let's bring on our guest, Mr. Chris Gaida. Chris, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Number one, I love Rick. So any friend of Rick's, I automatically want to talk to him and be friends with because he's just too cool. But I was thrilled to hear that you've got this book, and it's been out for a little bit, called Arm Candy. Tell us about the book, Chris.
Yeah, I agree with you about Rick, first of all. And I'm actually in the movie for like 3 seconds. I'm a shirtless bartender.
Oh, we always love shirtless bartenders. There you go.
Yeah, so I have like a major line. Not really. But so I wrote a book called Arm Candy, A Celebrity Escort's Tales from the Red Carpet, because I was, for about 12, 13 years, an escort for celebrities in Hollywood. And by escort, it is a non-sexual job, and it happens at every award show. And people were wanting to know, what is it like? You know, what is it like meeting Julia Roberts or Betty White or any of the other celebrities I escorted? And I would tell the stories over and over again. And I figured, hey, people are really interested in this. People want to know what happens behind the scenes. So I'm going to spill all and write a book about it.
Well, you know, one thing that I've enjoyed while reading this, Chris, is, you know, and number one, I didn't know what the book was going to be about. All I knew is that, you know, if Rick said to talk to Chris, I'm going to talk to Chris, and this is going to be great. So I wasn't sure if this was a fictional account or if this is a real life thing. And I'm so pleased to read that these are actually your experiences that you've enjoyed over the last, you know, 15 years of being a escort in the Hollywood award business. And who knew, you know, you always knew that there were people that kind of helped the celebrities, but I didn't know that this was like an official job. How did you find out about becoming an escort for the award shows?
Yeah, I think the celebrity escorts have been around for about 30 years, and nobody has really talked about it or known about it. And I remember talking to Entertainment Tonight and Extra, and they were shocked. They're like, we're at every red carpet. We never knew that this career existed. And I think it's like one of the best kept secrets in Hollywood and one of the most fun jobs. Basically, I was temping at MTV, and somebody came up to me and said, we need an escort for the VH1 Diva show. Are you available? And, you know, of course I had all these questions of, I'm not sleeping with anybody, and what does this entail, and why do they need an escort, and all the typical questions you have. I wound up showing up at the address that was scribbled on a piece of paper, and it was amazing. It was everything that I imagined and more. And I had full access to every celebrity. I was there. And on my very first assignment, they gave me three women from Saturday Night Live. And basically what an escort is you need to – there's two roles of the job. One is that you need to take care of the celebrity, make sure they know where they're going. If they need to go to the restroom, you show them where the restroom is, get them to the gifting lounge, et cetera. But the more important role, and the reason why they have it, is that you're really a right-hand man for the producers. So you're there to make sure the timing of the show is accurate and that if something changes, which always does at these live award shows, that the celebrity can be on stage at the exact time. If there's a 10-second delay, it seems like a half hour to the audience. So every second is really crucial to running the show properly.
So, Chris, when you were growing up, you know, and you're going through your career counseling in junior high and high school and sitting down with your advisors, did you pick out being a celebrity escort as your top pick, or did you have other career ambitions when you were younger?
I had no idea that the world existed. I had no idea it was even possible for me to go to California. Even in high school and college, I kind of was like, wow, that's so far away. I grew up in a small town outside of Philadelphia, and it just felt like another world to me. And I would watch the award shows and stare at everybody and be like, wow, they're so important and they're so special. And never in my wildest dreams would I imagine standing on the Oscars red carpet or any of the other red carpets. It was mind-blowing, and I actually went to school to study law, and I got a degree in pre-law from American University in Washington, D.C., so it's as far from Hollywood as you could expect.
So what did your parents think when, you know, you said, hey, Mom and Dad, you know, I'm going to go, you know, take these actors and actresses, you know, and, you know, show them a good time inside the Kodak Theater or, you know, the wherever you're at?
Yeah, it's interesting because my parents are very down to earth and they don't get the whole entertainment industry. They really didn't want me to be a part of it. They thought, you know, you need to be practical and have a good job, and you stay with your job and you stay with that company for, you know, 30 years. That's what they did. And I, you know, I went to a good college and did pretty well. And then when I moved to New York, They were like, what are you getting involved with? Why are you working for an entertainment company? And then when I said, I'm just hanging out with celebrities, they just, I'm sure every fear in the world came into mind. But they just didn't really understand it. And it's funny, actually, to fast forward, 10 years into it, they finally went, I brought them to the Daytime Emmys in Los Angeles. My mom was a huge All My Children fan and a huge soap opera fan. So I brought them to that, and they had the best time. They walked the red carpet. They hung out with Susan Lucci. They sat at a table. Barbara Walters was there. They got to meet tons of people and free drinks and free dinner. So I think they got it at that point, but it was like 9 years of, what are you doing? You can't really make a lot of money doing this, and this is not stable, and this is not what your education was for.
Well, you actually tell a great story about your involvement with Susan Lucci, because you've met her on now numerous occasions, and she's also been a good friend to your family. Can you maybe tell a little bit of, I don't want to give away the whole story because you got to read the book, Arm Candy, to get everything. But can you tell us maybe a little bit more about your time with Susan?
She was a doll. Like when I always been a fan with her. My mom has had cancer a few times, and her first bout with cancer was when I was in high school, and I would sit with her during her chemo treatments and watch All My Children. And so that's kind of how I got hooked into it, loved it. And when I was first doing these shows, I met her and she was great. And I've escorted her. She at first to me seemed really phony because she was so nice. There's a couple actresses in Hollywood that come across when you meet them, to me anyway, as really, really phony because they're so nice. But then when you hang out with them long enough, you realize that's not an act. That's just who they are. And at one point, again, fast forward a few years, my mom had another bout of cancer, and she wound up doing a little video for my mom while she was going through her treatments. And I sent that over to her, and I just she's always has a special place in my heart.
Wow. And I think that's one of the things that is interesting, because you name names, and when I'm going to be telling everybody here, you are probably the most politically correct, nicest person, even describing some of the situations that, might not necessarily have been so rosy. And I don't know if I could have had the same tact that you have, Chris, but you name names, but you do talk really about the stars that you meet who are really spectacular and your experiences with them. And it's funny because, some of the names that you talk about are people that might have a different public image, through the course of the years. And then, you talk about your time with them. And I find that actually very endearing and quite sweet. Did you have, were you encouraged?
I was encouraged to do the opposite, actually. I was encouraged to – I had a couple publishers that were interested in the book that wanted me just to trash everybody. And to me, that wasn't genuine. To me, I really wanted to tell what my experiences were. And 95% of the time, it actually was very, very positive. If anything, the negative part would be the publicists. but most of the celebrities have been great. But the times that there weren't, I wanted to be as truthful too. So I did write a lot of – my honest opinions about certain celebrities and certain situations. I wanted to be as truthful as possible. So when I was trying to figure out how to do the book, I sat down and I said, I'm going to pretend I am a person who's going on a vacation to some other country, and the person reading it is going to be my friend, and they want to know exactly what happened. Here's some pictures, what happened, what didn't happen, what you liked, what were you scared of. Kind of the angle I took was, trying to relate to everybody, let them experience it through my eyes. And sometimes some things happen, but I also wanted to say that's my circumstance on that particular day.
Right.
I'm sure there's plenty of people who have met me who, on a certain day, I'm a complete nightmare. I'm in a bad mood, something happened, traffic pissed me off, whatever. So I don't want to – I'm quick not to label celebrities as certain words or certain categories because it just might be that day. But I do want to be honest and say this is what happened, this is the circumstance, and let the reader determine.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you give I'm going to pick on poor Sharon Stone, who I absolutely think is great, but I've never had the pleasure of meeting her in person. But you've escorted her a couple of times, but had and you had opposite ends of the spectrum experiences both times.
Yeah, it was very weird. The first time, I was very excited to meet her. It was in New York, and it was a Vogue Fashion Awards. And I really wanted to look my best. So I went out and I thought, what is she like? She's splashy and fun and it's a fashion show. So I bought these silver pants, which are crazy, which I definitely don't own anymore. And this black tight shirt. And I was like, wow, I'm going to look good and fun and flashy and she's going to love it. And I got to meet her. And the minute I met her, I just said, hi, I'm Chris. And she said, don't talk to me, walk three steps in front of me at all times. And it was just shocking to me that she just had nothing to do with me. She didn't even want to chit chat or be polite. It just seemed it was just like, I don't want to deal with you. Just walk in front of me, lead me where I need to go. And that's it. And it was kind of heartbreaking. And throughout the night, I did try to talked to her a little bit and she just wanted nothing to do with me. And it was so bad that a publicist actually came up to me afterwards and felt really bad and wanted to take me out to another party and had a limo waiting for me and all that. And I just at that point, I didn't want to leave my friends and stuff. So I wound up staying at the after party at that event. And but then another time years later, which I wouldn't think she'd even remember me, I escorted her to an event in Los Angeles, and the minute she got out of her limo, she saw me on the red carpet and ran over and gave me a hug. So
crazy.
It was the complete opposite. Yeah, crazy. I don't know why. I don't know if she remembered me. I don't know if she thought I was somebody else. I don't know, again, if she was in a bad mood that first time. I don't know if she was embarrassed because I had these terrible silver pants, which could have been a possibility. I don't know. But that's kind of, I think, from what I hear from other people, that's what you expect from her. It's kind of one way or another.
Well, hot or cold, one of the things that I really like about how you write, Chris, is the fact that you are really telling things from your perspective. You also say, give people a break. Maybe you're having a good day. Maybe you're having a bad day. I don't know, but here's my chance to, interact with you. So I'm going to do the best job I can. It's very clear. You take your job very seriously. And, throughout the course of the book, you have, even at the beginning of the book, you give 12 key steps to being a good celebrity escort, which I thought, well, okay, there we go. We're getting a how-to manual as well. Not only great stories, but we're going to figure out how to make this happen. So why do you think this really resonated with you for a career path as you began this journey? Because you had your first experience in New York, and then eventually you're out here in LA. When did this become, a career for you?
Well, I think to me, it started out as, do you want to do this one night? And it was really cool. And I took it really seriously because I knew major people were depending on me. And although my job isn't saving lives or doing anything that's that significant in the world, it does – one little mistake does dramatically affect a lot of other people and the situation. So I definitely want to take it seriously, and I figured – this is such an opportunity that nobody has. This isn't, you're not a production assistant or an assistant to somebody. Like, this is something where my main job, I couldn't leave a celebrity. That's like the number one rules. I cannot leave their side. I mean, I could be like 5 feet from them, but I cannot leave. They have to be in eyesight at all times, which is incredible. I'm not tied to a nasty boss. I'm not sitting at a desk all day. It's a really fun, great experience that is unique. And so I took it really seriously, and I just try to do as many shows as possible. And I've got a lot of great feedback from celebrities and from publicists. And so one show led to another, and I just tried to keep that up and to do as many shows as possible. And of course I had day jobs because there's only so many award shows a year. But I was also asked to be an assistant a couple times, a full-time assistant for a few celebrities. And that wound up not happening, but I didn't want to be traveling all the time.
So that was going to be my next question here for you, Chris, is because, you know, I was like, this either pays really well or it's going to be like everybody else in Hollywood. You know, you have your moments of glam and you know, in front of the camera and the fame. But then outside of that, you know, you've got these day jobs. What are some of the ways that you've, you know, found between award seasons to kind of, you know, pay bills and things like that? Are you still staying in the entertainment segment?
Yeah, so I was working at MTV as a temp. I wound up becoming full-time in business development. I worked on the business side for MTV for a few years, and then I moved out to Los Angeles, wound up working for Disney for 5 years, and then I've also worked on a bunch of productions. So I've worked my way up basically from like a PA, production assistant, all the way up to producer. I have produced a few talk shows, and
wow.
And it's just been a great ride of just learning the business from the bottom up and really understanding how people work. And people think the book's about trashing celebrities and how dare I go against the industry. And it's
totally not that.
It gets the wrong impression. And at first, people were really angry. I got a couple hate emails from people that worked on award shows and how dare you. You're going to ruin award shows forever, revealing all these secrets. And I do reveal a lot of secrets, but it's like saying, I'm not going to watch movies now that I know how movies are made. And I think when
That's
DVDs
silly,
came
right.
out with when DVDs came out with behind the scenes shooting of movies, people didn't stop watching movies.
I think it made you want to watch it
more.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
so I think it's just so interesting. I got, you know, a couple, it wasn't a lot of people, but it was just the hatred in the emails, and I include that in the last chapter. I put, I think there was two of them that I put of just nasty comments that people wrote to me and said, and it's just, I just think it's funny. It's like if people take the time to read it and then they have nasty comments, then I respect that, you know.
Yeah, you're like, that's
then I can
fine.
Listen to it.
So that was going to be my question. Do you think that, you know, these were comments that were made by people who had no clue what you were even writing about? They were just like, oh, it's, you know, he's telling tales he shouldn't tell. And then, you know, they haven't even read any of the words that you wrote.
Yeah, I mean, it was even before the book came out, because Extra did a story on me that the book was coming out. And that's when I got the emails and the nastiness. There was an email chain that went around to award show producers to hire this guy. It's such a ridiculous thing. And there's one person I worked with a lot, and I wrote about this in the final chapter. But I worked for him constantly in New York and saved his butt so many times and really helped him out and really did a good job. And he wrote an email saying how he had to fire me from award shows and how I was a troublemaker. And it's so ridiculous because I had, when that email was sent out, the day before I had an email from him begging me to do an award show.
Of course.
Saying how I was the best person he's ever had. And I've never, even to this date, ever been fired from an award show. So it's just funny how quickly people want to turn on you without even, you know, talking to you about it or knowing the facts or just trying to.
All they're doing is trying to, you know, cover the. I think that what really is interesting, Chris, in this business, and I don't, whichever widget you want to be in. So it doesn't really matter if you're behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, you know, on an ancillary project or whatever. There are a lot of people that are going to be really fantastic, like Susan Lucci, and you're going to get great opportunities to have connections with people like that and make friends. And then you're going to have the people who run their entire lives based on fear. And I think that's very clear in a lot of the relationships that you talk about in the book. You know, one of the things that I just read right before we started the show is, you know, you're doing one of these big, you know, red carpet events, and, you know, you were technically off the clock, and you had to go clear the entire compound for celebrities, and you run into like the security guard who has this, you know, God complex and tries to block you from actually doing your job because Justin Bieber is somewhere in the vicinity, which you have no interest in even doing, you know? So
it was the most absurd. Yeah. He was like, you're just trying to get in there to see him. And I said, I have absolutely no desire to see him. I don't care. You know, I just need to do this for security reasons for the staff. You close his door because they were in different media rooms, whatever, curtain it off. I'm not going to go in that room. I just need to make sure that everybody gets out safely and they're on the way to the after party. And
now,
he just was.
He had nothing to do with it. But Chris, what I thought was really cool is the fact that you ran into this character after this, and the second he saw you, what kind of reaction did the guy have?
Oh, yeah, it was just, again, it was nasty.
Well, he just didn't like the fact that you were trying to do your job. And, you know, I think the thing that is funny is that, you know, it's not
he
like you're just
the producer
some...
and complained.
Yeah, and he's complaining about you. It's not like you're just some rube off the turnip truck. You know, you're there with a credentialed all-access pass. You know, you're there to do your job, and here's some guy that thinks he's just like, well, you know, I'm going to pound my chest and tell you how big and tough I am because I can.
Right. Luckily, everyone had my back, and they were like, no, he's doing his job. Like, at least I had my back, and it wasn't a situation where, like, I was the bad guy again. But it's like, again, people are like, if everybody just would focus on their own job and do the right thing and communicate effectively, I think it would go smoothly and it would be fun. I mean, entertainment industry is about being fun, and I have fun at all these shows and working with most of these people. And I just think when there's some people get this God complex or some people think get paranoid that their job's going to be taken from them, it's kind of crazy.
It's totally crazy. And I love your attitude because it's just like, you know, there's a statement that's out there. It's like, together we all achieve more. And it's like it's the team concept, TEAM, together we all achieve more. And everything that you do talks about how can we, you know, work together? How can we be, you know, make this happen? How can it be smoother for everybody? Not just the celebrity, but also the other people that are attached to it. You know, you make a good point throughout the course of the book about establishing relationships, not only with the celebrity that you're assigned to, and I'd love to talk to you about that in just a second as well, but also all of the other people that are around, whether it's assistants or security guards or things like that. Why do you think that picked up for you to be, you know, so connected to the other people who are involved?
Well, I think to me, I had watched when you're on the red carpet and you're waiting for the celebrity to arrive, the other escorts are all waiting as well. And you see them kind of get paired up or meet up with a person. And I would say most of the time they ignore the girlfriend or the boyfriend or the mother or whoever the guest that's with them or even the publicist. And to me, you just see this, like, it's kind of sad. And I feel like we're all just people. To me, you're a person first and then you're a celebrity. And I would treat them as if I'd want to be treated, and I would treated them as if, you know, they're any other person. And so I feel everybody kind of has equal weight. Yeah, we need to focus on this one person, but their family members are there. They're part of this. They want to be happy. They want to be included. And I just think it's the right thing to do. And I think it goes a long way with the celebrities too, because they want their family to have a good time as well.
Well, yeah. And there's nothing more awkward than, you know, having that whole entourage and you feel like there's just like this big disconnect. So I think the way you approach it is great. Did you have any type of training for this once you kind of got in it, or is this all kind of like on the job and you figured out it as you went along?
It's definitely on the job. In the first, I don't know, 10 times even, I was scared to death. I was shaking. I couldn't believe I was standing on the red carpet with these celebrities and you could touch them. It was like, it was so weird. I'm like, there's no rope up. There's no distance. You could just talk to any of them and nobody's going to stop you. And it was kind of surreal at first. So I was just really quiet and I just observed everything. I observed all their behavior with each other. I observed how people treated them. I observed of what needed to be done. And for me, it's a job. And again, I think it's about treating people first. When they arrive, everyone's like, gets all excited that so-and-so is here. But they may need to use the restroom. Like, I think it's important to say, hey, do you guys need to use the restroom? Like, first, to treat them as people, because if they get rushed out on stage, and it's just, I've just seen so many circumstances where you're rushing somebody out and then they have to go to the bathroom, then you're running back and you're just going in circles. So it's like little things like that that seem simple, but when you're in the presence of an A-list celebrity, you don't even think of.
Yeah. I mean, well, and another story that you tell on the book is about, you know, it's the bathroom story. You've got 6 seconds before you have to be on stage. No, you can't go to the bathroom. You've got to hold it. I enjoyed that story just simply because, you know, you're really trying to respect the fact that, you know, we've got a live show going on and, you know, we can't wait for you to get back. You're going to have to wait. So
you just need to be, and that's the other thing I am. I'm brutally honest with people. And I'm, just because they're a celebrity, I don't try to kiss their butt. I'm sure I'm nice to them, but it's about being honest, and they can make the decisions they want. And so I'll say, sure, you can go to the restroom right now. I'll bring you right to it, but you're going to miss the show, and the producers are going to be mad at you. And I remember there was a scene, I don't think it's in the book at all, but I was with Sandra Bullock at the Golden Globes, and I went to her seat and said, you know, next commercial break, I'm going to get you and bring you backstage. And she said to me, what happens if I don't go? And I was just kind of like, oh, my God, she's being a bitch. Oh, my God. But she totally wasn't. She was joking with me. She was messing with me. And luckily, my immediate response was, I guess we'll just have to shut down the show because there's no show without you. And she laughed and I laughed. And so it's been able to, like, kind of be playful about this. This is a fun thing. These people do this year after year. You're one of escorts. They've seen a ton of them. They've seen tons of publicists. They've seen some tons of everyone. They need to have a little bit of fun and be playful as well. This is not so it's serious, but it's not so serious, if that makes any sense.
Right. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting is over the course of your career in doing this, and you've done, I don't know, over 150, 200 events, you have celebrities that will now – are you? And by the way, are you still doing this, or is this something that you've now kind of moved on from?
I am not. Before, okay. I was kind of burned out from it, actually before I even started writing the book. I continued doing it while I wrote the book because I wanted current stories, and I hadn't taken pictures for many years because I kind of was nervous about it. I thought it was a little unprofessional, which is funny now because everybody takes pictures and everybody posts on Facebook and Instagram. But back when I was doing it, I started in 1999. When I started doing it, you just never did that. It was very rare. I only did it if there was, you know, waiting for like 2 minutes for the limo to arrive, and we had a great relationship with each other, a great connection, and I was like, hey, do you mind if we take a picture? Then I would do it. Otherwise, there's a time and place, I think, for things, and there's many times I wanted to take pictures with celebrities, and it's just things were either rushed, or it just wasn't appropriate, or we're in the middle of a red carpet. Yeah, you can't do it.
So when you had – you know, you start having some success with this. You all had lots of celebrities or their publicist or team would actually request you. What was that like getting a request for a repeat performance with somebody?
It was incredible. I had a couple of celebrities actually go up, said, who's in charge of you? Like, who's your boss? And I'd point that person out and I said, what did I do wrong? Like, they're like, no, I need to talk to them. And I've actually had celebrities go up to the person who's in charge of the escorts, the escort coordinator, and talk about what a great job I had done and other publicists. And it was awesome. It was incredible. And of course, when you have that happen, then the next time you do a show, you're like, hey, you can request people. Because in the beginning, you're assigned someone and you don't really have a choice. But as you do more and more shows and people are saying good things and you're developing a relationship, then they bring you in. I remember one show, it was in Vegas, and they had an escort for Taylor Swift, and the publicist did not like him, and they got rid of they fired that publicist. I don't know who it even was, but they fired them, and they brought me on, and the publicist was like, listen, you know, don't get too close. She's a really sweet person, and we just want to make sure that everything goes properly, and everything went really well. It was great.
So have you had any of your experiences where you just go like, holy cow, and, you know, even really, you know, truly just impressed you? Because you talk a little bit about how stars sometimes are starstruck by other stars. Who's really been somebody that, you know, kind of knocked you on your feet?
That I've been starstruck with, you mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot, honestly. There's the people that surprised me, like I talk about how Queen Latifah surprised me. This is back, I think, early 2000s, and I was asked to escort her, and I didn't want to escort her. I knew her as like a rapper, and I knew she had one television show or something, but I felt like she was going to be difficult. I had worked with her manager in a film in New York at one point. I think it was her manager or her assistant, and said something that she was difficult, and so I just had that in my brain. But they needed me. She was hosting the MTV show, and they really wanted me on it. Couldn't have been the best, probably the best person I've ever escorted. Queen Latifah was fun, was nice. Her people were amazing. She included me with everything. It wasn't like, oh, and I have this guy that's escorting me. It was like I was part of the team. And I had mentioned, you know, being a fan, and I was doing acting extra work at the time. And they wound up a few days later sending a script to my house for a new film that she was doing called Taxi. And they had me audition for a role. I was totally terrible, and I was totally not right for it. But it was just amazing getting a courier bring a Fox script to my house and saying, you know, you have 24 hours to read the script and go to Fox Studios tomorrow and have this big audition. It was really – it was amazing, and it was above and beyond what obviously she ever needed to do.
How did that change your life?
She got me drunk a little bit at the party, and I go into all that.
But that's always fun,
she's
too.
She's been great. I mean, there's been so many – Betty White was amazing, and there's a story I talk about her at the Teen Choice Awards, and I walked out with her, and she wanted me to hold her hand, and so we walked out together, and the entire audience of the – I don't know how many people were there, but the entire audience all stood up the moment she walked in and started clapping. That's never happened ever on any show with any celebrity that I've ever seen. And it was, she was like, what's going on? And she was looking at me and said, they're clapping for you. And she said, I wasn't even going to come because I didn't think they knew who I was. And I just thought she was just genuine. She just didn't realize that these teenagers knew who she was. And she was blown away by it. So it's kind of an honor being there. It's weird. It's like you're so proud of the person that you're with, and it's like you have nothing to do with it, but it's an honor to be sharing that moment with that person.
Everybody, we've been hearing Chris Gaeta. He's got a book out called Arm Candy, and there's a link on the show page for you to go buy this tonight. So I'm going to encourage you all to do this. We're going to take a real quick commercial break and hear from our friends at It Matters Radio, and we're going to be right back with more with Chris and talk about all of the rest of the book in just a couple of moments. Hang tight.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Hey, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
Well, that's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
We've been privileged to have the author of Arm Candy join us, Chris Gaida. He is on the line with us today talking about his book. I have so much to ask him, and we have just a little bit of time. I say a little bit. We got 20 minutes, but you'll be surprised how quick that flies by. So one of the things that you talk about in your book, Chris, and I had to chuckle about this because it just – well, I thought it was hysterical. In the beginning of the book, you talk about making sure you know all of your Kevin Costner moves. Can you talk about what you were thinking when you wrote that?
Oh, thanks. Thanks again for having me on. Yeah, it's just funny because I love The Bodyguard. It was one of my favorite movies. I watched it in high school. And again, to be a part of the award shows was just has been amazing. And for me, it's, you just have to be aware of everything at all times. And when I was first doing it, you have this radio piece in your ear and people are talking, and then the publicist or the celebrity's talking to you, and then you have other people asking questions because they see that you have a headpiece, so they want to know, you know, what time it is, or just questions of where the gift lounge is, or just random questions. And then you watch all these people that are surrounding you and the celebrity, and it gets kind of scary, and you got to just make sure you're on the ball and you're ready for anything. And I feel when I'm with the celebrities, I feel very protective of them. And I make sure that if they're feel overwhelmed, I push people back or hold people back. And sometimes security at some of these events is sparse, or they're focused on another area. And you just need to really be on top of it at all times. And it's kind of freaky, and it's kind of thrilling, and it's definitely interesting, and you need to be alert.
So in the book, you talk about the gifting suites that are out there. And I've had the opportunity to see a couple of those in action for different events. What's been your experience with gifting suites? And have you ever had an item that you thought, boy, it'd be really cool if I could get my hands on that?
The gifting suites, I think, are amazing. They're great. I think that every celebrity should be invited. The surprising thing is there isn't. There's a list of certain celebrities that are allowed in the gifting suite. So you think you're with Julia Roberts, and, oh, of course she's going to the gifting suite. And you bring her there without knowing and reading all the paperwork, they won't let her in. It doesn't matter how big of a name if they're not on that list, because I guess they need to have certain criteria or certain sponsors. I know a lot of shows, if you haven't presented an award or you haven't won an award, you can't go. So there's different rules for different events. Yeah, you just think, oh, well, Julia Roberts can go anywhere. But the reality is that none of these people need free stuff anyway. But of course, I've seen crazy amounts of fun items. I've seen trips. I've seen beds. I've seen cell phones, especially when they first came out, everyone was giving away cell phones, the latest cell phones. I got a picnic basket thing that was really cool from a TV Land Awards event. And a lot of people are just not, a lot of times you're not allowed in there with the celebrity. So the rules and the situation really depends on the event.
I don't know. I've always, I think
to answer your question, though, I forgot. The AMC gift card is the best thing ever, and that's what I wanted. That's what I wrote about, I think. I think that's maybe what you're hinting at.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. It's free movies for a year for you and I think it's three people, and they give it out at a lot of events, and I can never get it. I've asked everyone, but they have to have your name on it, put your name on it and stuff like that. And so that you can't really
have to be official.
It has to be official.
Yeah, because I was going to ask about that, because, you know, in the things that I've seen, you know, the vendors are there. And, of course, the vendors, you know, bless their hearts, they paid a fortune to be at the gifting suite. And then they're giving away all of their product for free. So, you know, it's a huge loss, you know, for them, unless they get a celebrity or their, you know, their Julia Roberts or whoever it is that they really want to hopefully use their product in public or take a picture with them that the vendor can then use for marketing. But it is staggering to see the bags as these, you know, it always seems like they've got these, you know, little kids, you know, in high school or junior high school or something like that, that come around, or they're going to be the celebrities' person to carry their bag. And by the time, you know, they get through going through the gifting suite, you've got 7,000 pounds of free crap that these vendors have, you know, gladly given to the celebrities. And these poor people are carrying these bags out to the celebrities, you know, limo or car to take home. I just always get such a kick out of that, that, you know, that rarely does a bag not get filled.
It's funny that you say that, because it is. It's always, it looks like they're like a sixth grader that's a female that weighs like 80 pounds, and the bag probably weighs more than them, and they're struggling to carry it out.
Well, I think the last thing that I saw, I was talking to one of the little kids that were, you know, helping the celebrities out, and that helped, you know, somebody through, and then they were coming back with somebody else. And I said, well, didn't I see it with somebody else? And they said, yeah, this is like my third time through today. So, you know, they cycle these poor kids through. So, you know, bless their hearts. So what are, out of all of your time doing this here, Chris, what would be, do you have any, like, you know, your most embarrassing moment?
I mean, there's always dumb things I've done, especially when starting out. It was always trying to look the part. I talk about how for different events, like I would get clothing, expensive clothing from stores, buy it, wear it, put the tags in, and then return it the next day just because I wanted to fit in and I felt, you know, I wasn't good enough and people, I would stand out. I had a spray tan done that was really terrible. I've done the beds where you lay down and get tan on the beds, and I look orange. There's actually a picture of me in the book. If people buy the online version, you can see it.
It's with you and Jenny McCarthy, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Jenny McCarthy, and I look ridiculous. It looks so terrible. And she was like, I want to be in the book. And she's like, let's take a picture. And we took the picture. And then I look back and I'm like, what did I do?
Oh my gosh.
This would have been such a great picture. So I left it. I left my orange self in, if you get it, like a digital copy, but, in the paperback, it's, they do black and white photos. So you can't really tell, but,
I do see the color picture that you're talking about, Chris. And I know that you said you had makeup on and you did, you know, you did everything to try to minimize it, but honestly, In the picture, it doesn't look that bad.
Yeah, I covered it up big time with makeup and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. To me, it looks really bad just because I was supposed to be tan.
Tan and not red. You know, there you go, Rock Lobster. So when did you decide that you were going to sit down and turn all of these adventures into a book that was going to be such a controversial topic?
Well, I thought about it actually back in 2003, I think it was, and because everyone kept saying, this is incredible. You have such an amazing journey and stories, and it's fun things. And then I just thought, you know, I don't have enough stories. It's kind of like when you go for your driver's license, they say you're not an expert for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did that where you took your driver's license. So I was like, I'm not going to be an expert until I hit 10-year mark. So when I hit the 10-year mark, then I was really seriously thinking about doing it. And at that point, I started asking people about it. I thought every publisher in the world would jump on it, but nobody believed me. Nobody believed that the world existed. Nobody believed that I work with celebrities. People just never heard of it, so they're just like, no. So it took me a while. So then I got started taking more pictures, and then once the media started doing stories on it, then all of a sudden there was some interest. But again, a lot of the publishers wanted me just to bash everybody. And I wanted to be as honest as possible. And some celebrities may not look good after reading the book, but it's not my intention to bash anyone. Yeah.
I don't think there's a whole lot of surprises left for me. And I think the bashiest you get, and I'm not telling too many stories, I hope, out of the book, because I want everybody to go out and buy the book Arm Candy today. But I think the bashiest you get is when Chaka Khan is coming down the hallway and she, you know, pushes you out of the way. And I went, okay, I think that's about as dishy as Chris is going to get.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely pushed me against the wall and it ripped my shirt and go into the whole story about my friend not believing me. And
right.
He got pushed by her. And it was so ridiculous that that it would even happen. And then I also go into how after the book came out, I think it's in the final chapter, I was confronted on a live talk show in L.A. by her sister.
Oh, my gosh.
Telling me how dare you talk about my sister this way? And it was this live confrontation. And that totally took me off guard, obviously. And I just went into the story, and we were actually sitting next to each other, and I showed her the page of the – there was a break, and then we showed her the page of the book, and she read through it. And then when we came back from break, she was like, oh, she's like that. That's how the Chicago women are. Like, and she just totally took my side. So she was there to, like, embarrass me and to call me a liar and to say how dare
Mitch
I.
Like, oh, no,
and then
like
she
that.
And then we went out to dinner afterwards.
Of course.
So it was funny. It was like, she's like, wow, you totally told the truth. I thought it was something different.
Right. See, you know, isn't that funny? You know, because really, you know, you could read horrible, horrible things. And you are probably the nicest person for how you deal with situations in this particular book. So when the book was all said and done and you finally got it picked up, what was it like when you got your book in your hands for the first time after all of that work?
Oh, it was amazing. It was years and years of research. It was amazing. I was at a book signing at Barnes & Noble at the Grove in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And which is a very hard venue to get as a nobody author. I'm not a celebrity. I haven't written any other books. It was a difficult thing, but they were interested. There was, I think, 117 people or something like that out there.
Nice.
Incredible. So I was, and then I opened the book and I saw a couple of mistakes.
Oh.
And I flipped out. So there was the first few hundred books that went out, my publisher had an editor that was supposed to fix it, and they made it terrible. I don't know. It felt like a sabotage. So I went from like the highest high to the lowest low, and I was angry. But I couldn't be angry very long because I had all these great people out there. So I, did a book signing, and it was great. And then as soon as that was done, I was on the phone, the nastiest I've probably ever been in my life. We need this fixed now. And he was embarrassed. Like he didn't realize that they had done that, obviously. And I didn't have time. But usually they send you it after the editor goes through it, but the timing was too tight. So it wasn't his fault. It was just this, I don't know what this person was, but we wound up fixing it. But of course the first 500 books that went out had this mistake. So some
those
of the comments
really
go on Amazon
items.
And yeah, if you go on Amazon and you read some of them, they'll say they're bad grammar or bad spelling or something. It's like, how would I ever spell anything wrong in this day and age?
Right.
So it's obviously not me. And if you had a proper editor look at it, then it wouldn't have happened. But since then, it's all been fixed and all that. But thankfully, they were the only negative comments. I was really happy in the media. I got great comments from the media, and I've been on bunch of talk shows, which has been amazing. I was on Ricky Lake when she had her show
mm-hmm.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
And Jeff Probst, and then just a lot of fun things. And again, that was, if you told the high school me or the middle school me that I would be on a Ricky Lake talk show talking about a book that I authored, it just would be mind blowing. And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book too, is to show, like, to go for your dreams. It's supposed to be a little bit inspirational. I was like, oh, maybe this is like a self-help book for people, because it just shows how you can encounter difficult situations, overcome them, and hopefully empower yourself to do whatever it is.
Well, and you are definitely inspiring throughout the course of the book. And I like the little, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you're watching a movie and then the actor looks directly at you on camera and then, you know, tells you like a little secret, because you talk about testicular cancer and, you know, some other things that you'd gone through. And I always felt like, you know, here we are hearing about all of this and all of a sudden, you know, and then this happened. And, you know, you kind of take us on this little personal journey as well. So a first time author that's never written anything before, you know, how did or do you find the process of selling books compared to, you know, the experience of going through living it and then also writing the book?
Well, living the experiences is amazing. Writing the book was a terrible nightmare. It was just very hard to write about myself and try to be objective and to stay focused and to really do justice, like to be as fair as possible. That was always my struggle. It'd be very easy for me just to trash people, and it'd be very easy for me to make up stories. I had to look back at all my notes. I had to look back at all the pictures, all the, I had rundowns from the shows, and I really wanted to be as accurate as possible. So that was difficult. Selling the book, I think, is the fun part, because I get to meet amazing people. When I did book signings, it was great to have people come up and they follow up with me on Facebook. And I still know, like I've gotten some letters from some people that they said their life was changed and they've been inspired since reading the book. So that's been great. And I mean, talking about myself is not my favorite thing to do, but if people are interested, I like explaining these stories because I think it is a unique world that not everyone's going to be a part of.
Well, if not everybody can be a part of it, how do you go and apply for a job as a celebrity escort?
Oh, yeah. I don't even think that's on my resume at this point. I just have all my production stuff. but the amazing thing is it's hard to explain, but the skills that has taught me has been amazing with logistics and timing and being accurate and articulate. You have to be the every word you say. If you say a word that's incorrectly, it may upset somebody. Or it may mean something differently to somebody. So you really need to be exact in your phrasing and how you communicate with everybody. And it's just getting along with all kinds of personalities. And sometimes all those personalities are within one person. So it's definitely an interesting job that I've had.
What would be the biggest surprise as we get ready to kind of close this time out here, Chris? Well, I'll ask you, I'm going to have two questions, so I'm just making sure I give you enough time. What would be like the biggest surprise you would tell people about your entire experience, either, you know, behind the scenes? Because you talk a lot about, you know, green rooms and dressing rooms and the things that happen ahead of time. And all of your experience, what would be really shocking to folks who just normally turn on the TV and say, okay, we're going to watch the Academy Awards now. This must be easy.
I don't know if it's shocking, but it's definitely not as glamorous as you see. You're sometimes picking up someone's dress because they're walking through the kitchen and there's food on the floor and dirty dishes piled up and you're running them to the other side. A lot of these things are as organized as they possibly can, but things change. Celebrities cancel at the last minute. All kinds of craziness happens. Sometimes somebody blocks a hallway, so you thought you were supposed to go that way, and now you're like, great, I have 20 seconds to get to the stage, and the hallway is blocked. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes. People think you just walk out and talk, but there's a lot of moving parts, and it's not as glamorous. It's very stressful, and it's very stressful for celebrities. It sounds like fun, but when you have 100 people screaming your name and people get angry if you don't look at them or you don't sign something and you're getting rushed inside, they get pulled in so many directions.
And you've never had a fail?
I don't think I have, no. I guess you have to ask every celebrity I was with, but to me, I feel like everything has gone really smoothly. Like,
yeah,
at least on the surface. Underneath, I've been crazy mess, and I get home, and I'm the shirt soaked, and I'm sweaty and exhausted and and all that. But it's something it's just really fun.
There you go. And so if we were going to do – well, by the way, we are taping this on Mother's Day, and Chris was kind enough to take out part of his day to do this. So, Chris, what did you do with your mom for Mother's Day today?
Because for the last 15 years, I've been basically in Los Angeles for Mother's Day. So I'm finally back on the East Coast. I live in New York, and my parents live outside of Philadelphia. So we met them in a little town in New Jersey. Just had lunch, and it was just a really nice brunch. My dad, myself, my fiance. It was just nice just to relax and spend some time with mom. And I know everyone's going to get this after Mother's Day, but happy Mother's Day to all the mothers listening.
And then last, Chris, where would you like your people to, your people, your fans, your readers, the people who love your writing, where would you like people to stay in contact with you on social media?
They can do on Twitter. I'm at Chris_Gaida, and it's GAIDA. You can join me on Facebook. I'm pretty open and I'm pretty direct. So if you have specific questions, if you want to read it, I tell people just if they don't want to buy it, ask their libraries or go to their libraries and see if they can get it. It's not about me making money. I think it's just about fun experiences. I think anyone who's interested in entertainment should definitely read it. Anyone who thinks they want to go into this industry in any way should definitely read it, because I give a lot of tips and advice that I wish I got in college. They would have saved a lot of hours and pain. So yeah, just, or share it, have someone get it. And
there we go.
With friends.
There we go. Everybody, it's been Chris Guida. What a pleasure to have this talented gentleman on the show. His book is Arm Candy. You know, he's really nice about saying, you know, share it, go do that, go buy the book. So 10 copies again, one copy for you, nine to give out as gifts. Everybody, you know, would love somebody in Hollywood. This will tell some great stories and they will be able to do that. We will be off on Wednesday, so enjoy your day off from the show. But we'll be back on Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio with my co-host Rob Watson. Our guest will be Mike Drayden, and we'll be talking about all of that cool stuff. Chris, thanks for being on the show. We will see everybody live Thursday. Don't drive distracted.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.
A Napa guy knows the only way you'd give a freshly minted driver a brand new car is if he promises to never drive it. Instead, let him grind the gears and knock over the neighbor's mailbox in something a little more suited to his skill level. And with over 400,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, he can safely drive something that's nearly as old as he is. It's not perfect, but it's perfect for him. That's Napa know-how.